Right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week, we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool? Is it shit? Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit? Welcome to the editor's meeting. Welcome to the Cool Shit Podcast, episode 33. My name is Gareth Carter. I am joined by two guests, as per usual, but we have a virgin guest. I mean, a virgin to the podcast, right? I mean, I can't speak for you personally, but yeah. Josh, how you going?
Yeah, good, thanks. Good. Excited to make your debut.
Good, good, good. Glad to have you on board.
Debut's better than being a virgin. Debut's my better virgin.
Yeah, I'm like, well, yeah. Right? I knew that when I was a teenager. Like, this is my debut, right? And Matt, how you going?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
Good. And as ever, the little chief, aka the little chef, aka, really, not even aka, the actual chief editor of the Cool Shit newsletter. How are you going, James?
All right, my foot still hurts.
Still
bugging me, but other than that, I'm basically fine.
So you hurt your foot running a half marathon, which no one asked you to run. You just did it off your own back, right? You just carried on running, right?
That's correct, yeah.
So presumably you're off cardio. We're coming up to Christmas. Can we expect an increased James come January? And I'm talking about, you know, like the extras that you pick up over Christmas, the lack of exercise. Are we going to see a new and different looking James come January?
I'm planning to get absolutely
getting body positive.
I went to see the doctor about it yesterday, and I've learned now that after the doctor has given their diagnosis, there's only so many more times you can ask them to touch your feet before it becomes a little bit weird for both of you.
How you did it, can you touch my feet, please?
Well, no, but then I was like, do you want to feel the other ones, compare? And then I was like, oh, while I've got you here, could you feel my legs as
did
well?
Did he say, this is actually a debut for me, doctor?
Yeah, I should have done. But yeah, it was uncomfortable.
Okay, cool. All right, well, thanks for that uncomfortable story. Let's talk about cool shit, though. What's been happening this week? Feeling good about the stories?
I'm feeling fairly positive.
You sat there in a doctor's surgery looking them up, no doubt?
Yeah, I was. I'm feeling fairly positive. I feel like both of them are potentially a little bit contentious whether they would go in or not or qualify for cool shit. So that's kind of why I brought them here today for you.
So just to highlight, you talk about this at the end, but I'm trying to put it at the front so that you listeners get it. James writes a newsletter that goes out every single week. It's very popular. Sign up to it, but it's a cool shit roundup of what's happened that week. This is a podcast to discuss editorially, what makes it in? First story, please, James.
Since we're a bunch of big old bloody blokes and have all worked in football, I've gone for something to do with football. So Arsenal have just launched some new retro-inspired apparel, and they've done so with a video of Ray Parlour in a turtleneck taking over as their creative director for the day.
Okay, so let's dig in. So did he say retro-inspired fashion, did he say? Or?
Yeah.
Right.
So it's like a throwback range kind of thing. Yeah. So some right.
That's
there,
official, or is that your take on it?
No, that's official. Yeah.
Right.
That's
okay.
That's from the very top. Yeah. So I think they're using some of their kind of most iconic kits, old kits, as inspiration for some clothing, basically.
Let me guess. Is it the one with the red body and the white sleeves?
I mean, that doesn't narrow it down that much, to be honest.
Exactly.
But I thought they were quite apparel-y, weren't they? Because, you know.
Well, Arsenal.
No, what I was seeing featured.
It's also like sweatshirts.
And yeah, exactly. It was more sort of like athleisure wear,
yeah,
like
not,
lifestyle-y.
It's merch.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. But I felt like it's kind of moved on. I know clubs are always doing this sort of thing, but I felt like for Arsenal, they're trying to move it forward, aren't they? Trying to move the dial on what they're doing.
I feel like you'd expect this from kind of Adidas and Arsenal, but they seem to have, I might be wrong, but have they gone it alone with this one? Are Adidas even involved?
A lot of the clubs can't use their technical partner to make their merch because they don't own any of those sort of previous licenses and stuff, so they tend to do it unbranded, and they'll either go through someone like Fanatics, which is one of the biggest kind of suppliers and manufacturers of merch, you know, club affiliated merch, or they'll try and go it alone, which generally ends up in disaster and low quality.
And that's why it's always around this time of year you get those adverts out because Christmas is a real big time for sort of like club merch, I guess.
To buy Dad some Celtic slippers or something.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, Matt and I used to work with Celtic, didn't we? So we've both got a reference in our head probably of the Celtic Christmas videos, which are pretty special, pretty special.
Were they better or worse than this one?
Just more festive.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's leave it at that.
That sounds great. And then let's talk about sort of the execution of it, because Ray Parlour. So, like, let me dress it up for you. Ray Parlour is like sort of playing a sort of like an old fashioned sort of like fashion guy, sort of like that sort of 60s mentality of taking photographs, going like, yeah, great, a bit of a diva. And the thing that stuck out for me, whether you like the idea or not, is just he's really good at it. He was really good at acting in it. I thought he was great.
That's my hot take on this. Ray Parlour's got an acting career.
Yeah, right.
That's what made me, because I saw this pop up and I thought, you know exactly what this is going to be. It's not going to be that good. Like, so even, and I quite like some of these, but when Paddy Powell get like Peter Reed or something, you think this is actually quite hard to watch. Whereas with this, mainly Ray Parlour, but even some of the Arsenal players, I thought they actually did quite a good job, and some of the writing was just quite tight as well and not over the top. So I thought, considering this had potential to be pretty shit, I actually thought it wasn't.
Most football club stuff made by the club, I think, is pretty terrible.
Yeah.
This is next level above, isn't it? So, you say, even some of the performances from the players, to get, I think it's Saliba walks upstairs and just does a double take. That in itself is like 2021, so he's, you know, super content aware. But we've just said to players on shoots before, just walk 5 yards. And they've forgotten how to walk. They've walked like a Dalmatian, you know, both one side at once kind of thing. And to have a young player like that go, yeah, I've got this, and he nails his very small part in it, that's great.
Josh, are you a fan of this?
I think Arsenal are doing pretty well at the moment in terms of using their players in content. I don't know if you've seen the Chip Shop advert with Aaron Ramsdale, the goalkeeper.
Yeah, so we work with the directors and call them out, That Jam. Like, they did that. And
It's like the,
Yeah,
it's pretty cringe, but like, he does performance pretty well.
Yeah.
I think just generally, players now are so much more content aware.
But they seem like they want to be involved as well.
Much more into it.
Like, yeah, because they get it, don't they? They get it. Because now we're dealing, so, you know. And when there was that sort of like crossover of senior players that didn't quite get it, I think like that was affecting, because you could see it still affecting the people that were brought up in it, because they don't want to seem stupid in front of the senior players. Now, more or less, everyone is part of that generation, so they know the power of it. They know the power of marketing themselves, their own brand within that. And they're kind of used to it more, and footballers are getting better at it, right?
That job we did with Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain kind of did it behind the scenes. He was brilliant. Some of the older pros that we've done like shoots, they've not even turned up. They're just like, I'm not doing that. They're contractually obliged to. They just go, I'm not doing it. Or they'll go and they'll get to the front of the queue and go, I've got to pick my kids up, or I've got to play golf, or probably now play Call of Duty or whatever it is. And they're just not asked. The younger ones, they get it. They get that it's like, it's good for them. It's good for the club. Get some a few followers. See a bit of a future career in whatever it is, punditry or journalism or media or whatever. They just get it.
But particularly with this kind of particular Arsenal team as well, like they're known as a young group of players who kind of seem to have a good team spirit. They play sort of entertaining football, so it all kind of ties into that image of the current crop of players as well. So I think it's actually quite useful for promoting them as individuals and as a team, as well as the clothing line.
I guess, and with a bit of experience working in it as well, I think that brings that point back to Ray Parlour, because, you know, when a brand says to me, oh, we want to include an old legend in this, and you've got them for 45 minutes, my heart always sinks at that moment, because you think, oh, fucking hell. So I don't know whether Ray Parlour was sound out early for this. I don't know if people just knew he was funny.
Yeah, he's on Talk Sport and stuff, so.
Yeah, I know, but like, for him to be able to turn that performance around, I think that they kind of must have based it on knowing him in some way, or knowing that he could produce a performance like that, because quite often you get pushed to use people that just cannot do what you need them to do.
Like walk.
Okay, so usually I'd do some big, long, partially scripted spiel to introduce a story. It's ironic because you can all see me looking at my screen and I'm literally reading. But for this one, I'm going to make life easier for myself and for the people listening by just reading the headline of the story. San Francisco police can now kill people with robots.
So, right, I mean, this is fucking scary for a start, but also, just San Francisco, I've spent a lot of time there, I've lived in San Francisco. It's like the home of hippie. It's like California.
It's the home of homeless.
It's the home of homeless people. But what I'm trying to say is, like, San Francisco is supposed to be one of the most forward-thinking places in the United States of America. So that's the first shocking thing about this story. Or am I missing it? Let's discuss. Is it forward-thinking, thinking, do you know what? This is the future of it. We don't have to get, you know, bodies injured, etc., etc. Or are we sitting on the end of a fucking nihilistic fucking future that we've been warned about in many fucking movies? Discuss.
You have 20 seconds to comply.
Exactly.
Yeah. Nah, if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear. What are you so worried about?
Oh, there you go.
Well, you do accuse me of being a robot as well, so give the order.
I mean, let's dig in. Do we know what sort of robot it is? Or, like, you know...
That's what confused me. A big one with guns, I'm going to say.
Yeah, but is it, like, RoboCop style, or is it a drone?
In my head, it's more RoboCop. In reality, it's probably more drone.
One of those Boston Dynamics dogs or something like that.
With a gun. But then you think, like, when you see... You see kind of the development of Boston Dynamics or like the Tesla bot as well as drones. You think at some point all of those various technologies are going to marry up to make it. I don't think a RoboCop kind of design is actually that far-fetched.
Well,
now,
autonomous weapons, if you listen to Lex Fridman, who is, you know, in AI, he says that's one of the most worrying things about the future is autonomous weapons that, you know.
Yeah, and it's not
how we build ethics into those is like phenomenally difficult like place to be dealing with. So I don't know how this, I assume when they're saying, you know, robo police drone or whatever it is, there's going to be a human element behind this. There's going to be a human deciding
for now. What I was going to ask, is it autonomous or is it a man sitting in a shed with a PlayStation controller hunting bad guys down alleys, dodging piles?
Because it's different, isn't it? Like that, you kind of still feel like there's a modicum of control by an organisation.
I don't feel that's any different.
That feels
used in war.
Exactly. No, yeah.
That feels. I think it feels safer to me if it's autonomous. If there isn't a person involved.
No.
Yeah. Okay. But think about it this way. So I think there's a slight parallel with like self-driving cars, which intuitively seems mental. But I'm thinking, would you rather have some kind of emotional person, human being who's absolutely terrified and their main priority is just getting home alive themselves, or a cold, emotionless robot who can be kind of programmed?
Yeah, but
if the technology works, like, because the self-driving cars, suppose that even though that sounds dangerous, it would stop like a million road traffic accident deaths per year. So I'm wondering if this could kind of be the same as that.
Yeah, but it takes out like a layer, like a barrier level of like shooting them should be the last course of action you take. The more barriers you take away from that, the easier it is.
I'm not saying somebody's just throwing a gun on the ground, but
like the more barriers you take away, the easier it is for that decision to actually be shoot to kill.
Sure.
To sort of like Matt's point about a man in a shed with a PlayStation controller, I think that that actually does take some of the emotion out of it in a good way.
I agree.
Because then you're not scared. Yeah. You know, like I think like the ridiculous, let's highlight that, the ridiculous amount of shootings that, police shootings that happen in America that are unjust are caused, we've seen videos, we know what happens, by threat and fear, and it just escalates so quickly. It's very different for a European audience, for us kind of guys to watch it. It's kind of like a bit alien to us how that happens. But when you do watch those videos, it does seem that human involvement just really, really turns up the heat really, really quickly, which is quite shocking.
Understandably so, and it doesn't help that if you are one of those police officers, then you're worried that every person you're talking to could also have a gun. So if somebody's going to get shot, you're going to make sure it's them before you.
Exactly.
Not to defend the unjust shootings, but you can see that's not kind of excusing, but might be explaining slightly.
Yeah, no, but from a lot of those body cam footage things that have, you know, come out where cops have shot then appear to be dangerous, but soon after are found to be innocent kids and stuff. It's because the cop thought they had a weapon or presented some sort of a threat. If that threat's towards maybe, you know, 40 grand of drone.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're sat in Vegas in a cabin next to the guys flying drones in Afghanistan or wherever, then it's a drone, right? You can replace it. You can't replace a cop getting shot or thinking he's going to get shot. So the fear goes out of it, doesn't it?
Mm.
And then, you know, we're one step towards that kind of neutral logic-based.
But that's kind of what I'm thinking. Even though this sounds mental and awful, I think it could potentially end up being safer. Because they're not going to take their guns away.
No.
Safer, safer for who, though?
For everyone apart from the robots.
True.
Yeah, like you got the school shooting in Uvalde where the police officers were quite didn't go in.
They didn't go into the building. Awful. Like, so that's disgusting.
It's a lot easier to make decisions sending a robot to go and do it.
Yeah.
So it might help prevent that.
I don't know. When I saw this story, I was like, that's probably not good. But like discussing it now, I can see how it can take the emotion out of it. It can maybe slow down that sort of process where things are getting heated up really quickly. I don't really like anyone being shot, so I'm not going to put my...
Anyone?
No, I'm a massive hippie. No, don't shoot anyone.
Okay, well, you'll be first on the list then.
That's not how they shoot. Josh, welcome to the Cool Shit Podcast. You know how it works, right?
Kind of.
Yeah, okay,
good. A one-sentence explanation from James yesterday.
All right, well...
Should have listened to one of the previous 32 episodes.
Yeah, I've done that, obviously.
Have you got a story to bring to the Cool Shit Podcast this
week? I have, yeah.
Be embarrassing if you didn't, really.
Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, like Googling
that. That was the one sentence, to be fair.
Bring a story. Yeah, I've gone for anti-poaching e-bikes. So park rangers in Mozambique using e-bikes to patrol and catch poachers in the parks.
Oh, range anxiety.
Basically came down to the fact that they were scaring people off with petrol bikes. They could hear them coming, they could run away, and storing fuel became too difficult because it was being stolen. So, yeah, that was a creative solution for it.
So they've got e-bikes within, these sort of... I mean, they're pretty huge.
Yeah, they're huge,
Are there e-bikes like e-motorbikes?
So not pedal bikes. Like
push bikes.
A bit more than a line bike. Yeah. They've been... Especially made off-road bikes, basically. So yeah.
But I think to Matt's point, are they going like 20k or are they going
up to like 60 miles an hour? Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah.
60 miles an hour. They've set up like charging stations all over kind of the safari park, so they can go out and spend 3 weeks out there without having to come back to camp and stuff like that.
Epic.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah.
And also, I guess it's. With my you know, animal rights hat on, I think it's probably causes less stress for the animals as well.
Is it a mink cat?
Yeah, well, like they're silent, aren't they?
Yeah, well, that's not silent.
They're more silent.
Yeah.
I feel like if I was approaching a load of poachers, I'd want to make as much noise as possible.
That's what the elephant said.
Yeah.
But the point is that they know you're coming then, right?
Yeah, they can hear it from like a mile away.
Maybe this is just highlighting that I don't want to be someone who hunts poachers, because I'd want them to know I was coming so they could leave and wouldn't shoot me.
Yeah, right.
They shoot the animal instead, it's fine.
I'd rather them than me.
Where do we all sit on sort of like this e-bike stuff though? Because we are going...
I thought you were
going
to say poaching. Anti. Yeah.
We are going through an e-bike revolution at the moment. I don't feel like the government is necessarily supporting it, in that, like, you know, it's we're still in vague territory whether some of these scooters are actually roadworthy. Yeah. We've got electric bikes being sold all over the shop now. Where do we think? Because I think...
If you're under 55...
Yeah.
And you're able-bodied, it's cheating.
Is that what you reckon?
100%.
Yeah.
I ride a little bit around where I live and there's hills and stuff, and then you'll see someone just glide past you uphill because he's got a fucking e-bike.
Yeah.
It's cost him like $7,000 or something like that, and you're like, that's just...
You're being a bit of a Luddite though. Like, you imagine the guy with the horse and cart when he saw the first car, he's like, that's cheating.
The horse is not doing any of the bloody work. Surely you ride a bike.
But if it's just a mode of transport, not for... No, it can just be transport.
I'm talking about going out on mountain bike. I'm not talking about...
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Sitting down to the news agent or something like that. But even then, do the exercise. None of us get enough exercise.
And you know, I'm pretty biased, but I agree with Matt. Like, when someone cycles past me on an electric bike, I'm like, dickhead.
If you're like two old biddies and you've got them on the back of your caravan or something like that, yeah, fine, go for your life. But
the worst ones for me are the longboards. I'd be like, at that point, I'd be like, that's just...
The electric longboards.
No, the monocycles are worse than that. Those dickheads on the gyro.
Exactly.
Just want to like put my foot out in front of them.
Yeah.
But I see quite a lot of grown men coming out of Paddington with folded up scooters, and I would then prefer a longboard to that. I was like, at least have some shred of like
shreds.
I think it doesn't look cool, does it? It never ever.
I think it's
grown ups on scooters does never not like, yeah, look
no.
cool.
No.
And there isn't anything you can do to make it cool.
No, you're right.
Which scooters? The electric scooters.
Any scooters.
There's a ton of them. About I've never once ridden like an electric scooter, an electric bike. I'm too scared. I've had a go, quite often on shoots
you'll find if you're working on a location that's quite big, production staff like to bring them along, and they're fun to have a go on, but I agree with you, I just feel like wait a sec, Like, I can cycle on a bike pretty fast downhill. I can, you know, reach about 30k when you're going downhill or whatever. And it scares me more for some reason just standing there and being flung across. Yeah. Than...
There's something about being on a scooter of like your legs are sideways, you're straight onto it, and whatever you hit, you're going to hit it hard with your head. There's not even a front wheel pretty much in front of you. The proximity to disaster, I'm like, nah, I'm not doing that. And you look a dick.
Yeah.
I realised I told a lie there, by the way. I have had a go because my mate got one when he got disqualified from driving and used to drive it up and down the main roads in Kent. It's good fun.
It's Kent for
you. Yeah.
Well, you see, if you found a loophole, though, if you get done for drink driving, doesn't apply to scooters.
Okay, Matt, have you got a story for this week, please?
You know what? I had two really strong individual stories, but they both sit under the umbrella of something that we've talked about already today, but in quite a lot, is it's under this sort of artificial intelligence. So part one of my story is I started seeing all of these avatars pop up on my Instagram feed, you know, the creative avatars. I was like, what's all that about? And it's lenser.ai. there are other
I've seen your Instagram this week.
Yeah. So I had a little go on it because I saw someone I follow, and it posted pictures, creative pictures of her that were of a theme, and I was like, I wonder how it does the theme. And then I did mine, I've no idea why, but they all come back like spacemen. It does 50. You basically submit a load of pictures, which I know is dangerous, right? And then it
so how many pictures did you submit?
Between 12 and 24, this app in particular suggests. And then for £4 you get 50 avatars back, and they're all of varying but fairly high quality. So there's two things there. One is you're submitting pictures, right? And that's dangerous, as we all know. You're basically putting them out there for this thing to learn from. But on reading more about it, the app itself goes into the public domain and basically starts to copy artists. And some of the pictures that have been submitted as people's avatars have like a mangled version of the original artist's signature on it. So if you put your art on Behance or any of those sort of platforms that are out there for various means, you know, just for fun or for professional, or even galleries, right? This thing is like hunting down the internet. It's, I can't remember what it's called, but there's a big, basically sort of a data set that it's collected and it's got a name. And all of that goes in, and then it hoovers up all of the creative inspiration, as it were, and then recycles it into your avatar. So morally, it's...
ambiguous.
Yeah, ambiguous to say the least. You know, it talks about public domain and all of that kind of stuff and copyright. Then there's also the privacy issue of people are letting it look at their photographs and all the rest of it. So that gets into a dodgy area. Second part of my story, talking about morally ambiguous artificial intelligence, is ChatGPT, which is part of OpenAI, which is Elon Musk and his crew's kind of thing. I've been seeing more on that this week, which is ChatGPT can now write contracts, which is good. It can write theses, it can set exam questions, and it can analyze exam questions. And it's basically helping people. Some guy did this brilliant example of someone he mentored was severely, severely dyslexic and wanted to write really simple text messages to friends and things like that. And he ran it through this ChatGPT, and it just turned what this guy was trying to say very, very badly into just a really smart piece of copy for him, and it's giving him the
contact. Have you got a contact number?
I do that for him.
But again, this ChatGPT thing, so again, the moral ambiguity thing comes in again for artificial intelligence, is it's not perfect, but those contracts were really, really good that I was sort of reading through. But more to the point, the exam responses and the questions and answers it was doing, and then a professor came along and said, well, I can work it in the other way. I can set you exam questions using this as well. And all you have to do is give it the right prompts, and then it does everything else for you. So we're getting into this world where are we ever going to need to learn anything again to pass? Is that going to move quicker than the laws, than the regulations, than the examiners, than the education system? And we're going to go into this sort of slightly morally bankrupt time of let's cheat the system to get the degrees that I need to get forward.
Would it potentially make the kind of current education system just slightly obsolete as well? So rather than like, at the moment you're thinking, oh, I'd make it easy for people to sort of cheat, but like, I imagine in the 1700s, part of my education might have been to learn how to hoe a field or something, and that just became redundant at a certain point in time. So maybe the ability to kind of be able to, I guess, read a load of stuff and recycle information, which is kind of what most exams are, is just a bit of a redundant skill now.
Well, yeah, but that teaches you critical and analytical thinking, doesn't it? And
I don't know if it does. But the way kind of exams are set up, like, I think you learn some stuff, you write it, and then it's gone. Mm-hmm. At least, well, I might be speaking too specifically for myself there. But
if you just want to, I don't know, pass the bar now, right, that system is almost there, right? There was a few flaws and things in some of the answers from what I've seen on social media and stuff, but I could probably trust it to write a paper and get it 80% passable, whatever 80 gets you these days as a percentage and a grade and stuff. I'd never have to read that paper. I wouldn't even have to read it. I could trust the system to do that for me.
Yeah,
it's fucking brilliant. In a dark,
but so as someone that's gone through education as a dyslexic, so for instance, I'll give you an example. So I would do super well in expressive writing in English, but I'd get marked down really badly for the fact that I can't fucking spell
for the English.
I've missed out vital words that makes the sentence redundant or whatever. That would be super helpful to someone in that sort of position, that they can, like, you know, they can come up with wonderful stories, but they can't literally get that final bit down because they don't have the functionality to do that.
Yeah, I think at the moment, the positives outweigh the negatives, right? Like, it allows, you know, look at where we are with Brexit and people trying to export and the amount of paperwork they've got to go through and contracts they've got to set up and all the rest of it. It does all the heavy lifting for people who aren't contract savvy. You know, it can get all of those boring, shitty terms and conditions in there because it just crawls across the internet and finds the right ones and bosh, there you go. So there's so many positives for learning, for kind of legal matters, contractual matters, all the rest of it. Look, it's the stuff that you either know or you don't, and you don't want to get into it. So in terms of doing heavy lifting, it's great. But as with all of these things, people are going to go, right, now what else can I use it for? And how can I use it to hack the system, cheat the system? Because it's human nature, right? Is how can I speed this process up and streamline it? But it's like, are we going to get to a point where the work never gets done? Like, for the same thing as Lenza and Dali that we've talked about plenty of times before, I think it was this week, one of the bigger networked agencies have paid for a load of access to Dali to do conceptualization and storyboard.
So it turned out,
it just does it.
So it turned out, I can't remember which one it was. It's not The Economist, but it's one of the sort of like the weekly newspapers. They had been using AI art to do all of their
Editorial illustrations.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's perfect for that. It's going to put a fuckload of people out of work. People already start to talk about it to write copy. Now, again, it'll take a while to get the real kind of nuance and human nature to copy, but for sort of more legal copy or more functional or product-based copy, they'll do all that for you.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's going to put a lot of people in our industry out of work at some point, even if it's just a sort of ancillary services, as it were. Where do we all go after that?
Unfortunately, I've started poaching, so I can do that. Yeah.
So, Josh, you're an account director.
On a noisy bike.
You're an account director, which is obviously just a really easy job. You just sat there between the creative geniuses and the client. It's so easy. Do you think, like, can you see an account direction, like how that could get automated in some way, or AI could play a role in that?
I mean, yeah, I think at the end of the day, like, if you look at what it's doing across all industries, like, there's going to be eventually...
Our account director's worried, though. Because the creatives are.
You've got to be careful with your answer. If you anyone can do my job.
Anything can do my job. Just set up a little replier that just says, yeah, sure.
Circle back.
I'm just shaking a magic eight ball, be like, oh, we'll catch up with this offline and stuff like that. No, I think for most jobs, I think that boils down to everything when it comes down to AI, though. Is it going to be used? If it's putting people out of jobs, what's the replacement? Is it UBI? Is it being used to benefit people?
When I was studying at university, no one knew what fucking content was. Content didn't exist. Who knew that there'd be a whole industry of what, you know, of producing content? There are industries that are 20 years away.
TikTok dances.
Well, exactly. There you go. TikTok dances. There are industries within 10, 20 years' time that we can't yet foresee.
Yeah.
So whatever the automation does hoover up, hopefully technology is creating more opportunity elsewhere, right?
Yeah, and what's so great about having a job anyway?
Food. Let's go Maslow on it. You
know? Right, James, some stories there for you to mull over. What you're thinking, what you're saying. Oh, anything that Matt and Josh have to bring going to change how the Cool Shit newsletter might...
Can I just say, I've had a sneak preview. There are some good stories. Like, this is a particularly good Cool Shit.
Those are just the ones you saw as well. There are about five left over. I didn't even make it in.
Including my two. and
yeah. Josh's. to really, as a stickler for the rules, I could disqualify you for bringing two stories. It's tricky because I liked Josh's.
We could also disqualify Josh for it being absolutely nothing to do with our industry.
Well, I was going to say, not everything has to necessarily be to do with our industry. Robots, killer robots.
A sense of bending of the rules.
I did quite like Josh's one, but then it felt a bit parochial compared to kind of revolutionising the whole way we do pretty much everything. So I don't know which part of yours I'm gonna take from it, Matt. But I imagine
there are many.
I imagine I shall find some sort of angle about that and why we're not doomed and why it's probably a good thing.
Okay. Plus
Ray Parlour and maybe still Cocaine Bear.
I love Cocaine Bear.
It's great.
Have you seen the trailer?
Yeah.
Cocaine Bear wins.
And as I told you earlier on, it's got Ray Liotta in it, so I it believe that Cocaine Bear will be his Ray Liotta's final.
It's what he would have wanted.
Doing a massive line of Charlie with a bear. Game over.
Alright James, so where do we find the Cool Shit newsletter if you want to sign up for it?
zachagency.com/cool-sht.
Smooth, yeah, as your tash.
We really need to get that changed, don't we?
Yeah, I think we should. Yeah.
Alright, so how many of these have we got before Christmas? How many have we got left?
We've got next week.
Yeah.
And then maybe the week after.
Okay, so we've got two more. Should we do something special next week?
Christmas special. Should
we do a Christmas special? I'm announcing it right now. We are doing a Christmas special next week.
What do you have in mind?
Christmas stories only.
Well, perhaps.
I hate these themed courses. I remember the first one that I ever wrote when I joined Zach as an intern. It was a Halloween themed one. Christmas is fairly easy, but Halloween.
No, there's always some commercial bullshit going on.
Yeah.
Maybe we could actually do this one on topic. You know, within the industry, the realms of our industry. Anyway.
Could do. Didn't sound much fun.
So I'll see you next week for the Christmas special. Just be discussing anything to do with Christmas and nothing to do with advertising, I guess.
Cool, sounds great.
Alright, see you next week.
Goodbye.
Cool.
Good luck, guys. Yeah.